Israeli forces once again killed Gazans waiting for aid trucks as regime's indiscriminate attacks claim more civilian lives across the blockaded territory. A UN expert says Israel has launched a starvation campaign against Palestinians in Gaza by destroying the territory's food system. And the U.S. president comes under fire for his State of Union address, voicing support for aid to Gaza while he continues supporting Israel's campaign of genocide there. Hello, everyone. It's well over 5 months now into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue claiming more civilian lives. In one of the attacks, at least 10 Palestinians were massacred and several others wounded after Israeli forces bombed two houses in Deir Abala in central Gaza. Most of the victims were women and children. Separately, at least two people were killed and dozens injured, some critically, when Israeli forces fired at aid seekers at Al-Nabulsi and Al-Kuwait roundabouts in Gaza City. Meanwhile, at least one civilian was killed and three injured by Israeli bombing on a home in Jabalia, northern Gaza. The Israeli campaign of genocide has so far killed over 30,800 Palestinians, most of them women and children, and thousands of others have gone missing and are presumed dead, buried under rubble. Our correspondent in Gaza, Muti Abu Musabe, earlier joined us from the central city of Deir Abala. He updated us on latest Israeli attacks across the besieged strip.
The eastern parts of Deir al-Balah city were subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery that maintained shelling those areas all the night. And when it comes to the southern part of the Gaza Strip, particularly Khan Yunis and Rafah, they were under heavy bombardments as the Israeli warplanes continued and maintained their airstrikes against the residential buildings, particularly the eastern part of Khan Yunis and Rafah. In the meantime, according to the eyewitnesses from the eastern part of Khan Yunis city, that unbelievable destruction unfolded in the eastern part of the city after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from those parts, particularly and mainly Abasan and Al-Karara neighborhoods. The people could barely identify and know their homes and their houses and their residential areas, because they are witnessing unbelievable and unprecedented destruction and devastation that reached everything in that area. In Gaza City, also the Israeli warplanes renewed and maintained their airstrikes, particularly against Al-Zaytun neighborhood. Another residential building was bombed and destroyed by the Israeli warplanes. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes also continued their airstrikes and incursions against the northern part of Gaza Strip.
A UN expert says Israel is destroying Gaza's food system as part of the regime's broader starvation campaign in its genocidal war. Michael Fakhri, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, was addressing the Human Rights Council. He said destroying Gaza's food system runs along with Israel's restrictions on humanitarian aid deliveries into the territory. Fakhri said Israel has mounted its starvation campaign by even targeting small-scale fishermen, destroying around 80% of Gaza's fishing sector. Meanwhile, a report by rights group Action Aid International says women in Gaza are giving birth to stillborn babies due to malnutrition and collapse of humanitarian operations. It said many children have also died due to malnutrition. And now, let's take a listen to some comments by Palestinian parents and medics explaining how malnutrition is affecting the children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits, or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we're going through in Gaza. You can see for yourself where we live, in a school inside a 3-meter tent right in front of toilets. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
The largest Muslim civil rights organization in the U.S., CARE National, has criticized President Joe Biden over his stance on the genocide and the humanitarian situation in Gaza. CARE issued a statement on its X account after Joe Biden made a State of Union speech. It called on Biden, to stop playing both firefighter and arsonist during the Gaza genocide. The organization said Biden should stop airdropping food into Gaza and simultaneously sending weapons to the Israeli regime. CARE urged the U.S. president to secure a real ceasefire for Gaza. On Thursday, Biden spoke about humanitarian assistance in Gaza during his final State of Union speech as president. He told Congress Israel should not use the aid as a bargaining chip.
Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. They're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. To the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip.
Now, as Biden was speaking, some of the audience members there were holding placards calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a stop to weapons deliveries to the Israeli regime. Outside, there were similar calls. Protesters gathered waving Palestinian flags and expressing anger at Biden for supporting the Gaza genocide. His administration has been lending all-out support to Israel, from weapons to money to blocking UN Security Council resolutions on a ceasefire. A new report by the Washington Post reveals U.S. has quietly made over 100 weapons sales to Israel since the Gaza war began in early October. And that's besides the hundreds of millions of dollars in weapons sales to Israel that Biden initiated without congressional approval. Political analyst William Jones in Washington, D.C., believes Biden will continue supporting the Gaza genocide despite all the consequences for him personally, even in the upcoming presidential election.
He is really in trouble with the support that he's given to Israel. It has alienated a significant part of his own party, not only the Arab vote, but also many ordinary Americans who aren't of Arab or Palestinian heritage, who have been just totally shocked by the amount of deaths, by the genocidal conflict that Mr. Netanyahu is conducting in Gaza. He's just not willing to confront the Israelis there. I mean, all of this has to do, I think, with the election. On the one hand, if he plays hardball with Netanyahu, then the Zionist lobby here in the United States is going to be upset with him, and he'll have trouble in that area of possible voting. But if he doesn't do something, at least make the effort to try and assuage and to bring down this crisis, he'll also have people in his own party who won't be going out to vote for him. So he's playing a very dangerous game here. But I think the upshot of it is that he is not willing to stop a genocidal war in Gaza. And therefore, as you mentioned, and I think is quite true, the United States is therefore holds responsibility for the deaths that are ongoing in Gaza today.
The ceasefire talks in Cairo between Hamas and Israel have ended with no breakthrough. Negotiations are reportedly set to resume next week, but hopes are dim for any results, especially before the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. Earlier in our explainer program, we discussed this issue in detail.
Now, there's a real push for a temporary ceasefire or a temporary truce to take place before Ramadan when it comes to the U.S.-Israel genocidal aggression. The U.S. and the Israeli regime while giving the impression that they are after a ceasefire, are still continuing with the genocidal war full steam ahead, as if punishing the Palestinian side to succumb to their terms. Now, at this point, Hamas has received the draft proposal of the deal and has agreed to some of the terms. Now, taking a look at the first stage in terms of what it would cover. Well, based on the ceasefire, which in the first stage is going to take place, the time frame is 40 days, as you see here. In order for that to happen, both parties need to stop their military operations completely, including Israel's aerial reconnaissance operations over the Gaza Strip, and for it to stop for 8 hours a day. Then comes the issue of detainees, which has been one of the toughest issues, actually, to resolve. Now, there has been an agreement on what types of Israeli captives will be released. Taking a look at what was agreed upon, you have women, children under the age of 19, the elderly, aged 50 years and above, and the sick, which will be exchanged. Those are the categories. The ratio, now that's something that needed some convincing on the Hamas side, which it appears it has settled for one. The exchange would be, in terms of the ratio, as you're about to see, 10 to 1, okay? And that's pretty important. There are 134 captives. There's been an agreement for 40 Israeli captives to be released. So when you take a look at the number of Israeli captives based on the ratio of 10 to 1, obviously 10 times more equals 400, the number of Palestinian prisoners which will need to be released. Now keep in mind that this ratio was 3 to 1 in the previous truce. Israel has said if more than 40 are released, more days will be added to the ceasefire. And that's an important point. Now this ratio is important due to the number of Palestinian prisoners that Israel has languishing in their jails. It's good to have a reminder of that. Israel has about 13,000 Palestinian prisoners. How do we get to that total? Well, before the aggression, you had 5,000 that were languishing in the jails. And then since October 7th, you have, 8,000? Obviously, the grand total there being 13,000 Palestinian prisoners. So this somewhat actually gives the appearance that it's detaining Palestinians to give it more bargaining power. Well, not to the issue of Israeli regime forces withdrawal and the return of Palestinians. After commencing the first phase, Israel is set to reposition its forces away from the densely populated areas in the Gaza Strip. Once something like that happens, again, if there's a ceasefire, temporary one at that, which will be agreed upon, then you have Palestinians, which will then have a right to gradually return to what is said to be the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Now, there's a precondition there, except men of military service, which are aged above to the northern Gaza Strip. Now, on the humanitarian side, there is a big need for aid supplies, and the following is what's on the table. The commitment that's being made, and this is at a minimal in order to provide for the needs of Palestinians, you're looking at 500 trucks a daily of humanitarian aid. Now, the current number is way below the required amount, ranging from none to tens of trucks. There's also a commitment to provide tents, 200,000 of them is what's been hashed out, and also for caravans, looking at the number to be 60,000 for that. One of the snags to hit the deal is that Israel wants a list of captives to find out who is actually dead or alive, but Hamas says it would first need a halt to the aggression. Now, the Hamas Political Bureau member, Bassem Naim, this is what he has said. It is impossible to know exactly who is still alive and who has been killed. That's very logical. Another thing that he has said in terms of the demand that Israel has made, these captives are in different areas with different groups, different resistance groups in the Gaza Strip. So that's another reason why that list has not been released. And then finally, he has said, we have called for a ceasefire, okay, in order to be able to collect the data. So these are all very logical stances that Hamas has taken on that request and demand by Israel. Well, the latest is that the United States is preparing a new ceasefire resolution to submit to the UN Security Council. In it, what it has backed is an immediate ceasefire of which it would last 6 weeks in duration. Also, the release of all captives, it's all for that, obviously, and the support of the ongoing negotiations on the ground. Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, is circulating this text to then be officially submitted. Now, the U.S. hypocrisy, however, is in full display when it comes to Palestinians that are getting killed. for example, from a lack of food and medicine. Why? Well, check out this most recent entry, which reveals U.S. hypocrisy when it comes to military assistance. Just came out yesterday. U.S. has quietly approved more than 100 weapons package for Israel, amounting to thousands of munitions since the onslaught began. Thousands of these bombs the U.S. has approved, somewhat without making any noise about it. Next up, the veto, three of them by the U.N., and then this, the U.S. request for a ceasefire. Well, it's not a permanent one. So we can see that that's something Hamas is requiring, but the U.S. is only opting for a not a permanent ceasefire, which puts, again, U.S. hypocrisy at play.
An international congress has been held in the Iranian capital, focusing on occupation of Palestine. Legal experts participating in this event have been discussing violations of international humanitarian law in Gaza. Latest polls are showing that radical right parties are poised to secure the top position in several European countries at the next EU elections slated for June. Now, many have lost faith in the European Union and its ability to work for the common good for all Europeans. That's it for your latest. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Early on March 29th, starving Palestinians were queuing for long-awaited deliveries of food in Gaza City's Al-Rashida Street when the Zionist regime forces opened fire on them. According to Gaza health officials, a minimum of 112 people were killed and 280 injured, the majority of whom appear to have been shot. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, if hungry people in Ukraine had been shot and killed while queuing for food, the West would have rightly called it a war crime. Likewise, if troops opened fire in Syria, The US and the UK would rightly condemn it as an atrocity committed in this context. However, when people are queuing for food in Gaza, where the UN has warned of the worst famine it has ever recorded, the US instead noted it would complicate peace talks. Early on March 29th, starving Palestinians were queuing for long-awaited deliveries of food in Gaza City's Al-Rashida Street when the Zionist regime forces opened fire on them. According to Gaza health officials, a minimum of 112 people were killed and 280 injured, the majority of whom appear to have been shot. Fares Afana, head of the ambulance service at Gaza's Kamal Adwan Hospital, said medics found dozens or hundreds of bodies lying on the ground once they reached the scene. He said some wounded had to be carried to hospitals on donkey carts as there were not enough ambulances to take all the dead and wounded. There are counterclaims that only a small group were fired upon and the majority were killed in the crush from the resulting panic caused by the shooting. Either way, people would not have died if desperately hungry people had not been fired upon while queuing for food. This is a war crime and a crime against humanity. There is not one single document that sets out international humanitarian law, IHL, and international human rights law, IHRL, but a series of internationally recognized treaties, customs, conventions, and standards. In every iteration of these, it is made unequivocally clear that people in conflict must be allowed to receive aid, aid distributions must not be targeted by military action, and civilians must not be targeted by military action. The West cannot morally continue to shy away from highlighting violations of the rights of people impacted by conflict, whether it is in Gaza or anywhere else in the world that the Western regimes support them. Another violation of IHL and IHRL is when a military actor stops a population from receiving the basic rights, the food, causing widespread hunger and starvation. This is another accusation that has been made during the ongoing assault on Gaza, not least by the UN Special Rapporteur on the right to food. Is it not even more cruel and heartbreaking that people in Gaza, driven to record levels of hunger, so they queue en masse for any food, aid, so as not to die of starvation, are shot at and killed while queuing? As someone who for decades has been working in humanitarian emergencies and conflicts, while at the same time witnessing inhumanity at its worst, there are aid workers not sure they have seen a more horrendous atrocity committed in their lifetime. There is no way to look at the recent events without calling it what it is, a war crime and a crime against humanity. And the simple reason it is not being called what it is political. However, there is nothing political about the killing of innocent civilians. The U.S. Secretary of Defense, or we'd better call him the U.S. Secretary of War himself, has confirmed that over 25,000 women and children have been killed thus far in Palestine in just 5 months. On March 10th, many people around the globe will celebrate Mother's Day, yet in Gaza, so many children have lost their mothers, and so many mothers have lost their children due to this brutal conflict. Another milestone is the start of the holy month of Ramadan, a time when the majority of Gazans will fast, pray, and take part in spiritual reflection, self-improvement, and devotion. However, Benny Gantz, a Zionist war cabinet member, has warned that Rafah could face a ground incursion at the start of Ramadan, which the entire world, including the Zionist regime's partners in Washington, and in Western countries have warned against due to the likelihood of widespread civilian casualties. If this comes to pass, the horrors of the recent events will be repeated again and again. One of the most densely populated areas of the world will become a theater of war, which will mean more civilian death and life-destroying injuries. If firing upon starving people queuing for food goes unchallenged and unpunished by the international community, what incentive is there for military actors to spare civilian lives in a ground assault on Rafah? Why are governments around the world still supplying the arms to Israel to carry out these suspected atrocities instead of giving money to aid human life in Gaza? For those of governments observing Ramadan this year and those of countries who are not, we must support the people of Gaza all we can, and we must pray for an end to the atrocities committed by the Zionist regime against the people of Gaza. We must also pray that the Zionist regime, who has committed violations of international humanitarian and human rights law, will be brought to account. If they're not, what is to stop military actors from abusing civilian populations like this in all future conflicts across the world? These injustices need addressing, not just for the people of Gaza, but for all humanity.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kabet Apwai. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children, in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Mohammed Abu Saida is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, who joins us from New York. Gemma, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mohammed Abu Saida, I'm going to start with you first. Of which 500,000 are fighting for their lives due to starvation. The food insecurity obviously engulfs the entire population. UNRWA has said it has not been able to deliver food in over a month. There is aid going in, but not only does it not reach the Palestinians, when it does, they get killed in the process. Do you think that Israel is using food as a weapon, which is a war crime in itself, against the Palestinian population?
Well, good evening. The quick answer to your question is yes. This is what Israel has been doing for the past 5 months, especially against the Palestinians who are stuck and trapped in the north of Gaza, who did not leave at the beginning of this war 5 months ago, and now They are very much trapped and stuck in the north of Gaza. And very much Israel doesn't allow humanitarian assistance and food to reach to the north of the Gaza Strip. And to the best of my knowledge, some Palestinians have died as a result of hunger. And also many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the north of Gaza are eating animals' food. They have been eating tree leaves to try to survive. The situation there is very catastrophic. I have two brothers who are still based in the north of Gaza. Sometimes I talk to them whenever there are communications with them, mobile communications. The situation is more than catastrophic, more than tragic. One simple reason, Israel is very much using hunger and starvation as a weapon to try to drive the Palestinians from the north back to the south. Even though it's been 5 months since Israel has started this military operation against the Palestinians in Gaza, it seems to me that Israel is still insisting on evacuating the north of Gaza from the Palestinians and drive them to the south, even though their life or their livelihood in the south is not going to be better. Roughly 1.5 million Palestinians in Rafah in the south of Gaza are also facing death and facing Israeli pounding day after day. It's a very catastrophic situation. And the least I can say about that, what the International Court of Justice said about a month ago, what Israel is doing, there is a plausible reason to believe that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. That's the least that can be said about what is happening now.
Did you say that you have two brothers that are in the north of the Gaza Strip?
Yes, I do have two brothers with their families are still in the north of Gaza, yes.
All right, we're going to get into that a little bit because that's where the core of the 500,000 Palestinians who are dying of starvation is. But Daniel Shah, when you take a look at what Israel is doing, another prevention are the aid trucks. There are roughly 2,000 aid trucks that are at the crossings that are not being allowed to get into the Gaza Strip. And if there are aid trucks that are going into the Gaza Strip, they target the aid trucks where the most recent one, where two occasions of massacres happened, but the one that caught the world's attention, that's now being labeled as the Flower Massacre. Bullets were discovered on the ones that were killed. What is the story with that? Why would they do that, do you think?
Colonialism is humiliation. Colonialism is complete control. It was with French colonialism in Algeria. It was with the British and Dutch Afrikaners in South Africa. It was with the U.S. Attacks against Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, the dirty war against Syria, the sanctions against Iran and Venezuela. And it's no different with Israeli Zionism against the Palestinian people since 1948. It's been a long, slow, and now accelerated process of ethnic cleansing, of apartheid. The fact that we have to even say these words out loud in 2024, it harkens back to 1492 and to 1620 when the pilgrims first massacred the Wampanoags. And to think that so many of our people across the United States, across the quote-unquote Western world, still stand on the side of colonialism, white supremacy, and Zionism is unconscionable for me. You know, the Holocaust is being televised. The genocide is being televised. There's no excuse to not look at alternative sources of information. We know that the Zionists have done everything to control the narrative over this. And when we make that point, they accuse us of anti-Semitic tropes for telling the truth. But the point is that the mainstream media, from CNN to Fox to the New York Times, is completely complicit in this genocide, and history is recording this.
Taking a look at what the U.S. Role is over here, let's go back to the most recent active role that the U.S. played when it comes to food, Mukhabir Abbasada, and that is the food drop that took place, airdropping and parachuting these parcels. 38,000, we understand, sandwiches and dates, I believe. And you're looking at the 500,000 that are dying of starvation with 2.4 million who are hungry. Why do you think the U.S. would do something like that, the ratio being so low in terms of the number of food parcels, knowing that there's so many that are dying as a result of starvation?
Well, that definitely is a very good question here. Well, let me say that I think the U.S. decided at the end of the day to airdrop food for the starving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for two reasons. One is that the massacre that took place on the early morning of last Thursday, a week ago, which, as you mentioned, you refer to it as the flower massacre or the flower carnage that Israel was responsible for, that led to the death of more than 100 Palestinians and the injury of many hundreds of others. According to reports from the U.S., that the U.S. administration was not happy with the Israeli government that is not allowing food to reach to the north. So the U.S. decided to airdrop food, which didn't really mean a lot for the thousands of Palestinians who are hungry and starving in the north of Gaza. And second, I think it's more of like a PR campaign by the U.S. The U.S. Internally, among the American people who believe that this current administration led by President Joe Biden has done a very poor job when it comes to the Palestinians and helping the Palestinians who are facing death and starvation. And also, I think the U.S. is trying to improve its image among the region, among the residents of the Middle East region, who basically look at the U.S. as a partner and at least a complicit in this war of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And I think the U.S. decided to do that to try to make itself look much better. But again, as you just mentioned, the amount of food which was dropped by the U.S. on areas of the Gaza Strip doesn't satisfy the minimum need of the hundreds or of thousands of Palestinians who are hungry. And if they are not dying of Israeli pounding, they are, some of them are now dying of hunger and starvation.
All right, Daniel Shah, to dig deeper into this, you know, this is a very calculated move. This 38,000 figure, I don't think this figure just came out of the blue. I'm sure there were some who sat and analyzed the situation and figured out a number that needs to be airdropped, knowing full well that this is not going to meet the standards and the demand that's on the ground. Do you think that perhaps the U.S., in consultation with Israel, wants the starving Palestinians to be used as a tool in order to convince Hamas, you know, this truce talks, ceasefire talks that are happening, to convince Hamas to agree to this temporary ceasefire, that maybe it's using that as a tool?
Zionism, with full U.S. backing, is using any tools that they can. This is an informational war on Palestine, and it has been since 1948. Of course, it's a military war. They're now using starvation and dehydration on day 154 against 2.3 million civilians. And we don't hear the Zionists ever recognize, and they never will, the humanity of Palestinians. They label every single Palestinian baby, child, teenager, mother, elder, family member as Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. No one stopped to ask on the Zionist side, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? They always talk about the Israeli right to violence and self-defense. Well, what about the oppressed? What about the occupied? What about the colonized? The world is fully awake, the Muslim world, the Arab world, the third world. But here I'm in New York City and across the United States. There's such a dictatorship over information, over the media. They pretend to believe in democracy, but they don't, because overwhelmingly, specifically among young people, this genocide is extremely unpopular. And now they're going after TikTok. They've threatened to come after our TikTok at Midwestern Marks and many other organizations. So I think the hypocrisy for them to talk about freedom of speech and freedom of press, and certainly this number of 38,000 meals is extremely paltry. But I think they're doing it, too, so they can try to cover their backsides and one day say, well, look, we had these airlifts, so we were not complicit in the starvation and Holocaust of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Rabbi Sider, let me ask you this. Do you think people understand the scale of the involvement of the U.S. when it comes to this genocidal war? I mean, just the day before, the report came out that the U.S. has quietly approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales, amounting to thousands of precision-guided bombs, munitions, all kinds of bunker buster bombs, etc. I mean, this is the reason why, in one way form or another, there are starving Gazans. Okay? So the U.S. is complicit in that regard because of this military assistance to a large degree. What do you think about the fact that the U.S. has continually provided Israel with military assistance?
Well, of course the Palestinian people know about the U.S. role in this war. Of course the Palestinian people know that the U.S. is more than complicit. The U.S., in other words, is a partner to this Israeli killing an Israeli pounding of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you for a number of reasons. First, the U.S. has used its veto power three times. Since the start of this war on October 7th until now, the U.S. has used its veto power three times to block any U.N. resolution at the U.N. Security Council to reach an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and put an end to this Israeli genocide and Israeli killing of the Palestinians. Second, from the beginning of this war, Israel deployed its warplane carriers in the Mediterranean to try to deter other countries or other non-state actors to get involved in this war between Israel and the Palestinian resistance. And also, as you just mentioned, the U.S. has also supplied Israel with a lot of weaponry. Ships and airplanes full of ammunition and weapons have been provided to Israel over the past 5 months. And in addition to that, the U.S. is repeating day after day that Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to do whatever it finds it. I mean, lately we just started to hear that the U.S. Patience with Netanyahu and the right wing in Israel is fading away as a result of extreme right-wing policies by Netanyahu's partner in this government. But yes, the Palestinian people, they are aware of the fact that the U.S. has been helping Israel politically, economically, and militarily. And it's, I mean, in the age of social media and the age of information revolution, I think you cannot really hide what the U.S. has been doing. Not during this war, but even before the war erupted, or before this war erupted in October 7th.
The ceasefire talks that are taking place, which are hanging by a thread, Daniel Shah, has a lot of sticking points and divisive issues in it. One of them is the request by Hamas for this to be a permanent ceasefire, but yet Israel and the U.S. are adamant about it being a partial ceasefire, not a permanent one. Why is there such an insistence on that, do you think, by the U.S. side?
Yeah, one is left to wonder. I mean, the U.S. government has the highly paid intelligence experts who are monitoring 25 hours per day, 8 days a week, everything that goes on, not just in Palestine, but in Ukraine and Taiwan and Guyana and always waging these proxy wars. Why would they want an all-out genocide of an indigenous people of the Middle East on Biden's record, on the U.S. government's record? Well, that's because whether it's Biden or I think Trump to a lesser extent, liberalism is hegemony. And liberalism corresponds to the needs and the profits of the Lockheed Martins of the general dynamics of these massive military corporations. That's why you have 100 secret weapon sales. That's why they're trying to push forward $14 billion more for the Israeli General C. Bears, and then for the proxy war, $60 million more, even though it's still been caught up in the House of Representatives. And to be demanding a ceasefire after 154 days of genocide, I mean, this is not an outlandish demand. This is really asking for crumbs. I mean, humanity is asking for the Palestinians to have a place to breathe. Humanity is asking for a Palestinian state and Palestinian self-determination. So the fact that we can't even get ceasefire, even though we have millions of people mobilized across Western Europe, across Africa, across New York City, the entire world is standing up against the U.S. and Israeli axis of genocide and demanding justice. The fact that they are continue to ignore us shows you how unpopular the U.S. government is in the world. And this is going to have a colonial boomerang of violence effect in the upcoming days, months, and years. Who could ever trust the Israelis again? Just when the Israelis were thought that they could sit down with the Saudis and with other neighbors, the Israelis have shown just how unneighborly and genocidal they are.
Israel's economy is not doing well. Mukhabir Abu Masada, just to change gears here, and we're looking at a warning to the Prime Minister Netanyahu by the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who told him, listen, you got to make sure that the economy in the West Bank is going to flow, that it's not going to tank. This is pretty interesting, because if it's issuing that warning to Netanyahu, doesn't that mean that if the West Bank falls apart and goes into the direction of the Gaza Strip, which at this point is in crisis levels now with the killings and the abductions, etc., don't you think that that poses an existential threat to Israel when its economy is not doing well and the West Bank economy is teetering on that as well?
Well, what I can tell you about that is that the U.S. is trying to do its best to stabilize the West Bank and to keep also Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, under control. The last thing that the U.S. and Israel would like to see, especially during the month of Ramadan, which is approaching in a few days, is instability in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which, by the way, Israel is sometimes trying to provoke the Palestinians through its incursions and into West Bank cities like Jenin, Nablus, and other Palestinian cities, trying to provoke the Palestinians into a new intifada or an eruption of violence against Israel. And as I mentioned, that would be the last thing that the U.S. would like to see, in addition to what did to the carnage and the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I think the U.S. has been asking Israel to do two things. One is that Israel has been withholding PA, Palestinian Authority, money, taxes, and revenues for the past 5 months. Israel claimed that part of that money goes to the Palestinians in Gaza, and even though those Palestinians in Gaza are not members of Hamas, but Israel is trying to punish the Palestinians collectively. And second, there are more than 100,000 Palestinian laborers who are from the West Bank, and since the war erupted, they are no longer working, and that is destabilizing the situation in the West Bank now.
Thank you. We're unfortunately fresh out of time. Thank you, Mukhabir Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University. Daniel Shah, thank you, academic and commentator from New York. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vitahwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety. This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world.
Music.
At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. السلام على أئمة الهدى ومصابيح التجا وأعلام التقى وذوي النهى.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal ma'arif.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
ورحمة الله وبركاته السلام على الأئمة الدعاة.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we've been talking about this beautiful dialogue from the 10th Divinely Appointed Imam, alayhi salam, in which he talks about the ideas of absolute compulsion and absolute free will. So, we talked about absolute compulsion before this, and of course, This conversation is quite lengthy, and that's why we had to spend so much time on it. After proving the Holy Quran and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and talking about compulsion, we find that Imam Al-Hadi alayhi as-salam, he starts to talk about the concept of free will. Now, again, this is a concept of free will as in absolute free will, meaning that Allah has authorized and has given complete power to people to do whatever they like. This idea that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, has given free will and He has no control, He has no power. And this is what the idea of absolute free will is, which is being spoken about in this conversation. So Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salam, he continues and he talks about, as for the concept of free will, it is a concept that says that Allah has authorized His own people to choose Allah's enjoyments and wajibat and things that must be done and prohibitions, muharramat, and then Allah has neglected these people. Whereas the infallible imams of the Prophet's progeny say that if Allah has authorized people and then just let them go, then